And I think Bob, we're okay to go. Do we want to start the recording and then you can let me know when it's okay to call us to motion?
Yeah. No, Mr. Webb?
Not tonight. He had something come up with work unexpectedly. He may dial in, but at this point, he might, we should not expect him.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're recording and I'm sure Maggie is also.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, everybody. It is 7:00 PM on Monday, August 17th, and I'm going to call the regular meeting of the Board of Finance to order. And with that, I think our, as we've been doing in lieu of public comments, we've been asking the public to send in any questions or comments in advance. We did not receive any in advance of this meeting, so we're just going to move to our next agenda topic, which is the monthly reports for June of 2020. Before we kind of open it up to Bill to see if there's any overview, there's two general comments. And I don't know if Bill's gotten a microphone yet or not. Does not look like it, so this might be a quick update. But what I was going to say is two things. So the first one is that I would like to just thank Bill and his team publicly. I know it is year-end close time, which generally, if anybody has worked in finance or other things, year-end close is not the most fun. And Susan will just loop you in on this comment too, along with everything else you've been doing, but it's a definitely a busy time for the team. Want to thank them for everything that they're doing, as well as getting our packages out and, you know, I know at least answering some questions. The fact that it is year end made me want to just highlight that I'm not sure that the June numbers we looked at are all the final numbers. So we can do some high level questions today, but on the flip side, we may not go deep with questions. If anything, if you came up with some as you were looking at the packet, Bill had suggested potentially if the team could email him directly, he could make sure he was looking at those as they were closing the final books. And we expect that in September, we will have a cleaner number to look at for full year, fiscal year 2020, which was July 2019 through June of 2020. We'll have cleaner numbers either for our September or October meeting. Yeah, Sarah.
There was a little interchange on email. We talked about this at the last meeting. What of the packet could we possibly get before really the end of the week before the meeting? Is it possible to get these numbers on, let's say, Tuesday or Wednesday before the meeting, or do those have to wait until Thursday or Friday? I know there are some things that come in late and some things that are available earlier. Because the earlier, I have trouble looking at stuff over the weekend. It's just a little rush if it comes in on a Friday afternoon. What do you think?
So I don't know if Bill has gotten to the point that he can talk yet or not. But we can, I think, Sarah, it's a fair question to ask which package pages. I do agree with Bob. Some of the agenda topics that go beyond our general monthly statements, we may not want to send out and then have to do updates on, but potentially we could do it in two parts. So, Bill, unless if you can nod by saying yes or no, could
you hear me?
Pardon me?
Oh, you can hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. I don't know. I'm having challenges.
You've solved your problem, and so that's pretty good for a Monday. So the first question would be, do you think that we could get the exhibits up until like page, I think it's through page 30? Could we get those? When would be the earliest in the month that we could get those and we'd feel comfortable about what was published and could get pulled together, I think is the question.
Good question. So we're open through for the you know the 6:30 financials through 8:31. My goal is to have everything updated for 6:30 by the first week of September. So I could provide reports during that first week of September if you'd like. I feel pretty comfortable with the numbers at that point. That's about 2.5 weeks away or so, maybe three.
Even just getting it on a Wednesday before the meeting instead of a Friday before the meeting would make a huge difference.
Oh, okay. You're talking about in general. Okay.
Yeah, no. I'm in general, the difference of having a couple more weekdays to look it over, and also weekdays if we did have any questions. I think the concern is that when we get information midday Friday, I completely agree with Sarah. For me, I'm completely consumed with my children over the weekend, and it's really hard for me to take a look at a packet. If I then have questions on a Monday, it may be too late for you all to pull together answers to the questions. So the more you can get us by, you know, Wednesday of the week before the meeting, the better. And that's totally understanding that there are some things you won't be able to get us before Friday. It's totally understanding that there could be updates and that kind of thing. But if there could be a chunk of the packet that came earlier in the week, it would be so incredibly helpful.
Yep. So to that, I can, usually what's holding us up is usually the bank statements. I can get the majority of information, I would say by Wednesday before. There may just be a, you know, particular bank statement here or there that we have not gotten yet to input and, you know, drop into a couple of these Excel sheets.
Yeah.
But I would feel I could hit Wednesday end of day.
That would be awesome.
But that would be, again, just to be clear, that would be the, you know, the front end piece like we discussed. Those first pages from IV with these Excel spreadsheets, just with the exception of maybe a couple, you know, bank interests left off of it.
That would be awesome. And we're not trying to make work for you, Bill. So, you know, if it turns out that it's making your life difficult, you know, we can roll it back. But I just find that I really can't thoughtfully look at this before, you know, really Sunday at the earliest. And then it's too late to really ask you questions. So.
No, I understand. Yeah. I got you. No problems. Of course, the other pieces of the agenda, you know, those items from the Board of Selectmen and those other things that we add, they would come after the fact. Is it, you know, I hate to do things twice. I mean, if I present the packet and it's missing a few of the items that are, you know, pretty non-consequential as far as, like, interest and things like that, can we just leave it off for that particular packet and not have to go back?
Potentially, but I would be perfectly comfortable getting an update on Friday that included information from the Board of Selectmen meeting or something like that.
Yeah, but I think, Katie, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, go ahead.
The point is, some of the financial exhibits that are on pages 1 through 30, they may not be able to be complete, but if you could get 1 through 27, can we just do, and I'm using that hypothetically, can we hold off on some of the smaller exhibits and not have to share them twice with updated numbers? I think that we only want one version of exhibits out there for a meeting. So
that way we won't look at them twice also.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's possible to send the minutes out, you know, again, knowing that we may not have selectmen, but if the minutes could come early also, that would be helpful too.
Right, so why don't I do this? Why don't I take the takeaway, because I want to be conscious of time, and I definitely hear the desire. Let's, Bill, you and I meet, figure out what parts of the package are standard, right? I approve our Board of Finance meetings within a week of our meetings, so those should be able to be published, right? So what part can we publish in advance, and we'll target for the Wednesday before our standard meetings, and then what parts will need to come later. I think, Bob, my only question for you is figuring out how that works by way of publishing an agenda and all of that stuff. Is there any concern?
I was just thinking to myself how you would do that. You know, it'd almost be good if we sent out, then I don't know, that might be confusing. I think it'd be good if we could send out the reports that we have on Wednesday. And it would be those standing reports, hopefully it'd be most of them. And then we would just send that out just to the members and the other principals that are here now. And then we would send out a complete package that would be up on the website, go to the public, have the agenda and all that stuff on Friday. So it would be a complete package that everybody could look. So you could start by looking at the reports that come out earlier, and then we'd have a complete package that would go out on Friday that would go up on the website and include the agenda and go to the public and all those. That's one thought. That would just become too confusing.
Yeah. Okay. why don't, if everybody is comfortable, Bill and I take that as a takeaway to just look at what's there and come up with a recommendation on how much and what's the process by way we can minimize the work and still meet all of the requirements from the town, but get you guys your information, get everybody the information sooner. Does that work?
I'm comfortable with that.
Great. Thank you. And then Bill, I don't know if you have, so moving on, staying with our agenda, any updates or comments on the monthly reports, knowing that these numbers aren't final, any headlines that you'd want to share with us? And then I'll, and we can kind of cover in general the headlines, and then I will see if anybody has specific questions they want to ask, knowing that the numbers aren't finalized.
Yep. So, yeah, these are interim numbers, so that there is, it's hard for me to say, you know, in some cases, because we're reconciling account by account, whether, you know, that number is finalized or not. But a few things that, you know, obviously, you know, Jen and I and Bob are corresponding today. There are a few things that, you know, were obvious, you know, transfers that need to happen to reconcile some of these accounts. There is a pass-through as you scroll down on a revenue piece, the page 3, the very first exhibit, the revenue collection comparison report. You'll see towards the bottom there, there's the special ed cost that needs to get to BOE that will get out of there. And the tax collection, there is an exhibit after this. I won't cover it in this first piece. Most of the expenses are recorded. There are some different adjustments that have to be made, and you'll see a lot of encumbrances here. I just wanted to provide a little, I've learned a lot here about how IV treats encumbrances. So I just wanted to share a little bit. You're gonna see some of those here. It came up in today's corresponding with Jen. She had questions about the medical insurance. Now there were particular, medical deductions because the IV works off of developing payroll encumbrances based off of the actual pay period rate and schedule that is set up by individual. The actual medical insurance is in line with budgeted at this point. The encumbrance was created from the end of year pay period that had to be set up to process those very last days of payment for employees. It creates the impression that it's over budget, but it's not. And what I'm trying to do is go through these accounts. It's hard to go back to get rid of encumbrances, so to speak, if those particular transactions were already processed, because the system sees it as something that wasn't originally budgeted, even though in totality the expense was budgeted. And I hope I didn't confuse everybody by that. But I just wanted to make it clear that it's better to take the total, the net expense against the budgeted amount to determine whether something is over or under budget. Does that make sense? No. I'll move on though. So our goal, like I said earlier, is to have all the expenses recorded by the end of the year. We had to roll forward many POs to get them processed out of the new year for the prior year. So that was something that we have finished going through. Now it's a matter of getting them processed so they'll actually record in 6:30. So that's why some of those expenses are not in there yet. I'll move on, let me see. I think I'll end up raising more questions by going through some of these numbers than providing clarity. Let me see here. I want to also clarify one other thing. I'm trying to get to the page here, and this came up today also. You'll see for on page 21, the EMS revenue. You'll see in the very first line item, $100,000. That is actually a prior year adjustment into the new year. It's actually to the general fund. Unfortunately, this particular report, which I have since fixed, was capturing general fund revenue. And you can see that by the 010 versus 037 on page 21. You can disregard that. That's already sitting up in the general fund report. And the Board of Selectmen, I apologize, the Board of Selectmen report. What else? I think I'm providing more clarity of to the issues and the different things we're working through versus an update on numbers, so I apologize for that.
Appreciate, Bill. I guess I will ask the board at this point, any questions that you would like to ask at this point, or otherwise, if you were going through the exhibits and had some questions, feel free to send Bill an email directly, and he will, if anything, it's either something they've already captured and have looked at and have worked, or potentially it will identify something that still needs to be looked at as they're closing the books. Not that I think we should make it a free-for-all of questions, but on the flip side, I know they can be helpful. So any questions from the board that you would like to ask tonight?
I'm all set right now.
This is a more general comment about the report format, and that is that we're now seeing, other than the very beginning where we're looking at expense comparison, when we look at the more detailed line items, we're now seeing the far right column that gives percentages as it ends up being a percent that is the budget plus encumbrance divided by the budgeted number. And what I think would be more valuable to us and what we have sometimes seen in the past is actually the year to date plus encumbrance over the budgeted number. So that the rightmost column in a big chunk of the line items that we're looking at is a not very useful percentage to look at.
Right? So Katie, you're looking to see percent utilized versus percent remaining.
Yep. And
I'm really glad I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
I was gonna say that I was gonna comment on the same thing, that I'm finding this format really not very useful. The summary pages, the beginning that show us the percent collected and the comparison of the budgets, you know, so your revised budget percent collected actual is very useful because then I can see where we're going. I also like seeing the month year to date, so you can see where you were compared to that month last year. I don't know if you can do that or not, Bill, but this newer format, I just sit here with a calculator trying to figure out what's really going on. And
I agree, Sarah. I'm sitting here doing all of the calculations over again to get the calculation I want, instead of having that in the right-hand column and being able to just look at it.
Okay. So. Nope. Definitely appreciate the feedback. My suggestion would be if there's other things, potentially Bill and I can also talk about those.
Yep.
As we are,
we'll email you. That's fine.
Yep. What package that we can create. To the board, if you can also identify exhibits you really like versus exhibits you tend to not look at. If there's something that people are tending to not look at, I would like to identify that and figure out if there's a purpose. If not, then let's not ask people to do work. So,
really cool.
Yeah, no one likes to do work that isn't used. Okay, appreciate that. Any other questions on the budget? Yes, Sarah.
I've got a couple up at the beginning, and the first one may be more of a question for Bob Bessel and anybody else. I'm looking on page 2, building licenses and permits, and we've watched the whole last year of this being higher than what was projected. So it came in at 134.92, which is dollar-wise, $60,000 more than was projected initially. What does that mean for development and any impact on the budget for next year, I guess anybody. So, because that's looking to me like new houses is what that is. Is that, am I reading this right?
I think what you're seeing is you're seeing permits, but there isn't a breakdown as to whether that's residential or commercial.
Okay.
We need to get more detail on that to see what that entails. We're getting both. And Bob, I think you've got probably have a better sense of what that is than I do.
Right now it's not large scale development. In other words, you know, it's not like we have an apartment complex coming in. A lot of it actually is people are home and they're doing remodeling and swimming pools and those types of things. We're bringing in a lot of permits for those. Unfortunately, those are a lot of permits and, you know, staff is having to run out and do those inspections. So, you know, at this point, we don't see any large scale. I shouldn't say that. We have a couple of larger scales that may happen in the next year. But as of right now, it's a few houses, but it's a lot of small projects. People are home. They want to get things done. And so the number of permits are going up.
Okay, that makes sense. I just wanted to sort of ask about it to sort of look toward the horizon, you know, if there's something.
We're not at the point yet where I think we need to add hours to the building official, but at some point down the road, that may happen.
Okay. If you could maybe keep us apprised of that if something big does come in.
Yeah.
I had a couple other, where'd they go? A couple little questions. Oh, there were a couple things that just came in higher than I expected. So I'm in on page 4, I'm on the summary pages. Police vehicles came in at almost 20% over. Why?
There, on those, I am thinking, unless if Bill, we have an answer, thinking some of those could still just be with encumbrances. And I guess there's nothing encumbered in that one, so we can understand why that one came over.
Yeah, but, I looked in the detail and I couldn't figure out what was going on there. I could shoot Bill these on, I've got 3 of them on this page. I could shoot him an email. Would that be better?
Yeah, with the police vehicles, the surprising thing there is fuel. With the police vehicles, it was the fuel that went up, the usage for fuel. And that I can't explain because the fuel costs actually have been down. There might have been a little bit of increase in usage during COVID, but it shouldn't have been huge. So honestly, that was one of the ones I wanted to look at too. I don't really have an answer for it at the moment. It may very well be that maybe something was miscategorized when it was put in that column. I'm not sure. But it is surprising that the fuel usage would be that high.
I mean, it's not, in terms of dollars, it's not a gigantic number. It's what, $6,000?
Yeah, but if you look at the details, the amount of fuel used for the police vehicles was highest than what was budgeted. Mm-hmm. And just because of the amount that we're paying for fuel has been fairly low, just kind of surprised that it's that high.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking at it now as you speak. One
second. Dara, do you want to just quickly chime in on what are the rows just to see if there's anything, and if we don't have the answers or if we need to defer and write them down, we can.
Sure. Same page. The next one was Town Garage. Again, this is a little one, but it came in at 117, which I was surprised at because I would think it would be coming in a little less because we had very little snow this winter. You know, we, and
Town Garage is actually not the highway department. It's the maintenance for the Town Garage.
Yep.
And so I don't know if there are a couple things. One is the garage was new, and when we budgeted that first year, we might have been off a little bit.
Sure.
So that might be part of it. Beyond that, I don't know specifically what would make it go over, but it's not salt or highway trucks or those things. It's purely just the garage, the utilities for the garage, which again, we wouldn't have had a good idea that first year.
That's fair. That's true.
So it might be some of those things.
And again, here's another one. This is my last one. It's the community center, which was over by 16%. And I was very surprised at that because it's been closed for much of the time.
The community center, most of the cost there is for HVAC. We've had a tremendous issue with the heating and cooling in there. We've had to replace a number of the rooftop units, and that was unexpectedly. And so they're like $4,500 a piece, something like that. And so a good chunk of that overage is due to the amount that we had to pay towards HVAC. The heating and cooling has been a constant frustration in that building, as with a lot of our buildings, but in particular that building. So that's a good part of it.
Okay, thank you. I'm done. I don't need any more than that.
If I could just say in general on these numbers, because I went back and looked to and compared them to, we gave you our estimates of what we thought thought it was going to come in at the end of the year, and we thought we were going to be at $90,000 to the good. The areas that we thought we'd have money in, we still do. For example, the library, and a lot of that's because of COVID. Park and Rec, we have money left in. But some of the ones that are over, that we anticipated that would be over, are over to a greater amount. And that, a lot of that's due to those encumbrances, and we need to straighten out those encumbrances and find out how much of that is actual expenses remaining to be paid, and how much is encumbrances that just could be released because we're never going to use it. So, you know, until we get that straightened out, it's hard to determine the numbers. But the areas where we did think we'd have money left over, we have. The indication is we do have money left over in those areas.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. Any other questions? Otherwise, let's move on to the Board of Selectmen updates and referrals. And on these, I'm going to ask my team member, we'll get a little bit of an update, but then when we make motions, there was an email sent from me at about 6:30. We need to make sure that we get the exact wording into the minutes and into the recording. So there was an email sent from me at about 6:45 with a slight update to what needs to be done. And then there's also a motion on page 37 when we get to them, just giving you a heads up that I am going to need some reading done.
If you give us the cue, I'm happy to do the reading for you.
Bob, if we can go on ahead and cover item 3A, that'd be great.
Okay. Essentially, what we need to do is we need to revise the original resolution that was adopted by the board back in June. The process for the three bridges was a little different than what we would normally do. Normally, it goes to the Board of Selectmen. The Board of Selectmen reviews it and then refers it over to Board of Finance. This happened kind of the opposite. The Board of Finance was the ones who decided, hey, let's go bond for these three bridges. And then it went to the Board of Selectmen. And so when you voted on it, our bond attorney had not yet reviewed it, determined the resolution. I did my best shot at drafting a resolution for it based on what I thought you were going to do. But apparently my drafting wasn't good enough, and there were a few things that we missed. One of them I wasn't anticipating, and that was that we need to put in the full cost of the bridges, not just our share of it. It references that we're only anticipating paying the one half, not the full amount, but he wants the full amount to be appropriated. So that language is in there. The other item that was missing was the bonding costs, which include both the bonding consultant, the amount we pay to one of the rating agencies to come out and do a rating on the town, and then the amount we pay the bond attorney. And so those, and I actually sent you the breakdown of what those costs are. So those items are now in this resolution, and that's the modifications that have been made since that original resolution that you passed in June.
Any questions from the board? All right, with that, I'm seeing head shake no's. I would entertain a motion to move forward with this resolution.
Jen, do you need the one that was in the
email?
In the email. Okay, so I move the following motion: resolved that the Board of Finance recommends that the Town of Canton appropriate $4,885,000 for costs in connection with the reconstruction of Washburn Road Bridge over Jim Brook, West Road Bridge over Cherry Brook, and Old Canton Road Bridge over Rattlesnake Brook, contemplated to include testing and analysis, demolition of the existing bridges, access improvements, and other related work and improvements. The appropriation may be spent for design and construction costs, demolition and site improvements, appurtenances, equipment, materials, testing and inspection costs, surveying, engineering and other consultant fees, legal fees, net temporary interest and other financing costs, and other expenses related to the project or its financing. The Board of Selectmen shall determine the scope and particulars of the project and may reduce or modify the scope of the project, including the deletion of components thereof, and the entire appropriation may be spent on a reduced or modified project. A portion of the appropriation shall be applied to reimburse the town's undesignated fund, general fund balance for advances in an amount not to exceed $771,221.50 in connection with costs of reconstruction of the West Road Bridge over Cherry Brook as approved by the Board of Selectmen at the meeting held on June 24, 2020. The town anticipates receiving grants in the estimated amount of approximately $2,409,000 to defray in part the appropriation for the project from the state of Connecticut pursuant to the local bridge program, Chapter 240, Part 2B of the General Statutes of Connecticut, revision of 1958 as amended, for an estimated net project cost of approximately $2,476,000. The application for the acceptance of and the expenditure of aforesaid grants are hereby approved. Further resolved that the Board of Finance recommends that the town issue bonds, notes, or temporary notes in the same amount to finance the appropriation. The amount of bond and notes authorized to be issued shall be reduced by the amount of grants received by the town for the project.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
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 All right. Motion carries unanimous 5-0, and John Webb's not here.
Thank you, Katie.
Katie, wow. Oh, you think you just read all that? You think you just thought about all that on the fly?
Okay. All right. Thank you. And thank you, Bob, for making sure we got it all in there correctly. Now we can move on to the next agenda topic, 3B.
3B is more of a housekeeping matter. When I went back and looked at the meetings back in I think it was June, we had talked about using fund balance to pay for West Road Bridge, our share of it, and then of course we get reimbursed from the bond. But we never, that I could find, actually voted on it, or at least that I could find. I don't know if it did make it into the minutes or what, but I couldn't find it. So it was everybody, we talked about it, it was everybody's intent, everybody was comfortable with it. And it was kind of, I think, incorporated into the resolution when we talked about bonding. I want to just make sure we specifically put on the record that we're confirming that that the Board of Finance is okay with using fund balance to pay for the non-grant portion of the road. And there's actually a resolution in your package for that. But again, I thought we voted on it, or you guys voted on it. I just couldn't find it anywhere. And again, everybody seemed fine. That was everybody's intent. I just didn't see an actual vote on it. So I just want to make sure, in case anybody questions it, we've got it on the record.
Anybody have any questions about this? If not,
yeah.
I'll take. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just trying to think back. I think I do remember talking about this, and with that amount of money coming out of fund balance, I still think we were at a fairly reasonable amount of money left in fund balance, correct, if I remember right?
That's correct. And also, the intention is when it's approved at bonding, then that amount will be reimbursed anyways.
So okay, right.
Fund balance won't be impacted at all. Just real quick, there's a couple questions with this. One is, there was a question as to whether or not we were sure we could bond for the money, even though the grants had not been approved yet for the other two bridges. I did check with the bond attorney, said that was fine. We also had conversations, and it was last week, with DOT, because the money for the local bridge program had not been released yet. My understanding from talking to DOT last week was that funding has been released, and they should be reviewing our application shortly. So it sounds like we'll have a decision before we go to bond anyways, which will be good. So I just wanted to update you on those items.
Thank you.
Perfect. I think, Andrew, somewhere in our minutes, there's talks about where it would take the fund balance. It's 14 and change plus. It drops up below 15%.
Okay.
Not factoring in anything that came from this last fiscal year as potential returns to the fund balance, as well as considering the energy efficiency and the impact of those loans. And this 771, it was going to bring us to about 14.93%, which is slightly below the 15, was the projected fund balance impact. But to Bob's comment, the intent is to pay that back. The risk is the bonding measure for some reason doesn't pass in the fall, which is always a possibility. That would be the risk, and we would be, you know, on the hook for the 771,000.
Right. Okay.
Any other questions? Otherwise, on page 37, there is a motion that I would entertain. Anybody else besides Katie want to read that?
Somebody else's turn to read along.
I'm going shorter.
Sarah.
Okay. I'd like to move that we approve. I'm reading the italic section, right? Is that what you like?
Yes, please.
I move that we approve a local bridge program grant in the amount of $771,221.50 to partially fund the replacement of the West Road Bridge and to authorize a transfer of $771,221.50.
Sarah, you froze, in case you can hear this.
Yeah, I can, if you want, I can jump in there and reread all that. That's all.
Sarah, can you please pick up from the second 771,000 or start over again? You froze on us.
Oh, it froze. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
If you could read it again, that would be appreciated.
I'll read the whole thing again. Tell me if I freeze, wave at me or something. I couldn't tell that I froze. I move that we approve a local bridge program grant the amount of $771,221.50 to partially fund the replacement of the West Road Bridge and authorize the transfer of $771,221.50 from the undesignated fund balance to the capital improvement plan account to fund the remaining cost of replacing the West Road Bridge.
Second? Oh, Katie is the second. All those in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 Thank you. Motion carries 5-0. All right, moving on. Town bridge update.
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't require any action on your part. It is an update. The town bridge saga continues. Just to give you a little historical and moving forward. Back in, I guess it was January or February of this year, we realized that the metal pieces that are supposed to be galvanized, the main structure of the bridge, that galvanizing process wasn't working, and that many of the metal pieces galvanizing wasn't sticking to. At that point, we had a meeting with the town's engineering consultants, with DOT officials, with the contractor, and we discussed other options, and it was determined at that time the best option was to move forward with painting the bridge. So we would not galvanize it. We would paint it in the three-coat paint process. This is the recommendation of the contractor, and the DOT representatives in the room agreed to it. We went forward, got approval from the Board of Selectmen. I got a cost estimate on what the additional cost would be. Got ready to move forward with that process about a month later. And then DOT and their consultants came out and said they didn't want us to do it anymore. They wanted us to go back to try to galvanize the bridge. So we figured out another process for galvanizing a bridge. We put in one test piece, galvanized it, pulled it out, and it still wasn't working very well. They wanted a second test piece done. By they, I mean DOT. They had concerns that all the correct procedures weren't being followed. We had inspectors there when the first piece was done and the second piece. They documented exactly how the piece was galvanized. The piece came out and it still had significant issues, and that the galvanizing, the metal protective cover, wasn't sticking to the metal pieces. Therefore, the metal pieces would just rust, and not only would you have aesthetic issues, but you eventually have structural issues. And so at that point, I went back to DOT, said, look, it's not working. They said, well, we still want you to galvanize, but we're going to have a process for patching those areas that don't accept the galvanizing process. So then we went ahead and galvanized the rest of the metal pieces, and sure enough, the pieces that had metal pieces that stuck together, they were kind of like a box beam. They did not, the galvanizing process did not stick to them. And so we went back to DOT, and this is now 4 months, 5, 6 months have gone by. Went back to DOT and said, it's not working. And at that point, DOT said, well, if the town and the contractor and the town's consultants all come up with a process that they're comfortable with, you can come forward, try to sell it to DOT, and if we agree with it, then we'll move forward with that process. So we went back to our engineering consultants and asked them for a recommendation along with the contractor. Recommendation is that we paint over the galvanized metal, which was a process we had actually talked about 5 years ago. And so that's what we're looking to do and head forward with, is we would finish up galvanizing the rest of the pieces as best we can. And then we would paint over those galvanized pieces. And between the paint and the galvanization, those two would be what would protect the beams. And of course, by painting them, they would be more aesthetically pleasing. Color of the paint would be the zombie gray, which was approved by the Board of Selectmen at the last meeting and a couple of months ago. So the reason I'm telling you all this is that the cost of painting the bridge looks like it'll be an additional $500,000. That's both painting and remaining galvanization process. One of the frustrations that we've had with this project is it is very difficult to track the costs. For example, the crane that was on site to lift the bridge off was supposed to be the same crane that would lift the new bridge back on, which was supposed to happen in November. Obviously, the bridge never came back in time, and eventually the crane had to be taken away. Well, that crane cost about $120,000 to mobilize, to actually bring to the site, build it, have it there in order to put the bridge on. It costs about $120,000. So the contractor has told us we're going to have to pay an additional $120,000 because the crane had to be taken away and now it's got to be brought back. And DOT hasn't accepted that cost yet. So we don't know who's going to pay the $120,000. There's been, you know, obviously the bridge is supposed to be up in November. It hasn't, obviously hasn't gone up. The contractor's still working on it. The contractor was supposed to have it done by November. DOT has stated that because they weren't done in time, there would be additional damages, liquidated damages because of that. Obviously, the contractor says, no, there's a reasonable cost for the bridge not to be up, and so there shouldn't be any liquidated damages. There's been no outcome to that as of yet. So, you know, all of these costs we would owe 20% of. So the painting cost, if it was $500,000, that's an additional $100,000 to the town. If it was $120,000 to bring the crane back and we had to pay 20% of that, it'd be $24,000. So there are, it does look like there's some additional costs with the project that we would have to pay. Problem is, we don't know exactly the extent of those costs at the moment. We're still trying to figure that out, but I wanted to, and by figure out, I mean, it's information we just hasn't been clarified by DOT yet. So I wanted to let the board know, and at some point, once we determine what the extent of the additional costs are, we're going to have to go back to the public for an additional appropriation. The sooner we can determine that number and go back, the better. You can't go back and ask if you don't have any idea what, or I shouldn't say any idea, but you don't know what the number is. You got to kind of find that out. So when we looked at it back in February, it looked like we had about $64,000 as a cushion. Obviously, you know, that's changed since now. but we do not know at this point what the extent of the overage is. But at this point, we are more than likely over, especially with the painting. I mean, I know that's not good news, but that's where it's at the moment.
Any, Sarah?
This is sounding overly critical. This sounds like real error on the part of the contractor. You know, we got an estimate for them initially. You know, we planned on this. We looked at state funds. Why? Galvanizing is not a new process. It's been around for over 100 years, maybe 150 years. Not rocket science. So why did this happen, and why are they not eating this extra balance? I don't know why the town should have to pay anything extra when we got estimates and we planned on this and we budgeted for it. Why are we responsible for what looks like an error on the part of the contractor?
Let me give you when you talk about budgeting for it, let me give you an example of frustrations in trying to budget for this project. In 2015, we had a public hearing on the project. At that point, our consulting engineers, after paying them, I think it was over $80,000 for a study, is that the construction cost estimate was $2.8 million. In November of 2016, we signed an agreement with DOT, which said the cost estimate was $4.6 million, so the total cost would be $4.6 million. On March 10th, I sent the letter to DOT and DOT's consultants asking them to confirm that $4.6 million was the total cost of the project, because we had enough money budgeted for a $6.4 million project. We had budgeted, it was like $400,000 additional money. And at that point, we were looking to maybe take some money out of the project to help fund actually the budget at that time. DOT and their consultant rolled back saying, yes, of course, that's the number. It's the $4.6 million. We signed an agreement on that, a project authorization letter. It is what it is. That's the number. 3 months later, the town consultant engineer put in a cost estimate of $5.9 million. And then that number went up even higher a short time after. One of the things that that number had in it, it had steel at $5,000 per 100 pounds. The prior estimate for it had steel at $450 per 100 pounds. It's those are the kind of things that we've been working with. After we went back to our engineering consultants and said, look, you've got to change this. This isn't right. About, 2 weeks later, they came back with an estimate of $3.4 million. And the price for steel went from $2.5 million to $449,000. That gives you a sense of the frustration and the numbers we've worked all through this. And this has nothing to do with the contractor. This is just between DOT, the town's engineering consultant, and DOT's engineering consultants. And then the estimates has gone as high as $6.4 million at one point, including a 35% contingency. Think about that. That's well over $1 million on a $6 million project. So it's still unclear. The contractor says that the engineers didn't properly design the bridge, because when we took the bridge off the piers, the bridge, there's a flex in the bridge of 5 inches, which does actually make a difference. So at that point, the bridge had to be redesigned, which then was one of the reasons why the bridge could not be installed by the end of November, which then rolled it over into the wintertime. There are standards for galvanizing. You said anybody can galvanize. It's a very specific process, and there are very detailed specifications written out for that galvanizing process. We have multiple inspectors that watch them do that galvanizing process. They're doing it to those specifications. And even after following those specifications, it still does not come out right. Remember, you're dealing with 100-year-old pieces of metal. And so there are impurities. metal where they're joined together, and the galvanizing process releases those impurities, and then those impurities get stuck elsewhere on the metal beam and prevent the galvanizing to adhering to them. At least that's what everybody's theorizing. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of finger pointing whenever this gets done, but to blame it all on the contractor, I don't think is accurate. To blame it all on the engineer isn't accurate. To blame part of it on DOT as far as delays go, in my opinion, probably is accurate. But it's been a long, frustrating process, and it will take a little while to iron out at the end of the day.
I mean, our goal here is to get the bridge done and get it back up and operational and not to break the bank while doing it. And I think, as Bob said, this has become so much more complicated than we ever thought would be the case. We could start, you know, pointing fingers, and this thing could take far longer to adjudicate everything and establish who's to blame, and people say, I'm going to stop work, and we're not going to reimburse, and all this kind of stuff. And the net effect will be, we'll have a legal bill on top of everything else, and we still, and the bridge will take that much longer to put back up. So I think we have to weigh all of those things as we go forward with this. It's, you know, as Bob said, it's been enormously frustrating. It's eaten up hundreds of hours of staff time on our part, let alone what's going on with the contractor, the consultants, with DOT, and the subs, the galvanizing subs, the paint subs, the ones who are like scraping off, brushing up the galvanized to accept the paint and all that kind of stuff.
And then think of it this way, every time DOT says they want a different process, our engineer consultants have to draft up a draft and get approved the specification for that new process, and that's the change order, which then has to go back to DOT to be approved, so it could be an additional expense for the engineer consultant. It's an endless loop like this that just keeps going around and around and around. We think we've got a final process, which will get the bridge done. As long as DOT approves it, and if the feds need to approve it, they approve it also. I mean, DOT always says, well, it's the town's decision, but then they say, if we don't like it, we just don't give you our 80%. So it really comes down to they really hold all the cards.
Bob, can you just confirm, did I hear you correctly that we budgeted 20% of a $6.4 million estimate?
We did originally, and then we took out $200,000 one year to support the budget. We usually take money out of fund balance. Sometimes this year they took it out, or that year, they took it out of the CIP project because, DOT's estimate was that it was only going to be a $4 million project, and we had $6.5 million budgeted for it. So once they took out $200,000, essentially that's 20%. Then it was like taking $1 million out of the project. So at that point, it was down to $5.6 million, which again was well above what all the estimates were. So in some sense, if we had to go back and ask for another $200,000, we'd just be essentially going back and asking for the appropriation that we had already gotten approved once before. That's probably not going to make anybody happy, but in reality, that's what it would be.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you. Any other questions on the town bridge? All right, let's move on to another fun topic. So there's a police accountability law impacts. I think page 38 was the start of a bunch of things that the chief had identified. We can just get an update on these or whatever overview we wanted to get.
Yeah, there was some discussion. I think Kenneth sent an email around asking about, what we anticipate the cost would be, funding and those type of things. So, Wesley Hill had asked for a cost analysis on it. So the police department put this together. Chris Osorio explained it to the board of selectmen at the last meeting. I don't want to go through each section of it. you know, there were a couple of areas that probably gave the town more concern than others. One is the law of the accreditation process. It says that we have to use a what they call a CALEA accreditation process. What that is, it is a federal process and not the state process. The problem is it's very expensive. The second part of it is we've already done the first phase of state accreditation. So we've already been accredited. And the question is, why go through this other process if we've already been accredited? And if the standards for the state are very similar to the federal standards, why pay the additional cost to go through the federal process? So I know the Board of Selectmen raised some concerns about that. I've heard a number of other jurisdictions have concerns about that. It's not with being accredited, that's fine. It's why use the federal process instead of the state process when we already have a state process in place. And, you know, sometimes, including Canton very recently, has already started that process and has already been accredited, at least for phase one. All total, I think there's only 15 or 16 jurisdictions, 16 in the whole state that have the CLIA accreditation. So,
I was going to say that the selectmen approved, asked me to write a letter to the governor and to the sponsors of the bill, stating our concerns about CALEA accreditation as a replacement for state accreditation. So I have that letter going out tomorrow to everyone, and that'll add something to the discussion there. It's not just us who are raising this concern.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question on that. The CALEA accreditation, that's federal, correct? And that's brand new. Mm-hmm. That says effective 2025. I see that in the far left on row one.
Yeah.
So it's effective 2025. Why are we worried about it now? I understand why. So do we have to get the CLIA accreditation now?
Yeah, it's literally like a 3-year process to do.
Oh, that. Okay.
A very extensive process. And actually, most departments that do it have a staff person there who's one of their primary goals is just to make sure that process is followed through and all the policies are kept up to date and all those kind of things. So. And again, we've essentially met all those requirements just going through the state process without all that additional cost. So it's just a process of a cost-benefit analysis. If we can get the same up-to-date policies, you know, be accredited under the same standards without all the additional costs, why not take that route?
Yeah, I was going to ask if the state accreditation that we're already in the process of doing. Is it equal to the CLIA accreditation, or does it go above and beyond the CLIA accreditation?
My understanding is it meets the CLIA accreditation. It doesn't go beyond it. It's just it's a different process.
When okay.
You, CLIA, you bring in officers, inspectors from across the country. So you have somebody from Houston coming in that, you know, you basically have to put up in a hotel, and they come and they do an evaluation of your station and so forth. And but at the end of the day, the policies are, my understanding, very similar, if not the same, which is the important thing. What are our officers doing? What policies are they following? Are they
sure.
So that'll one of the concerns. Body cameras, dashboard cameras. There's not a concern with body cameras or dashboard cameras in themselves, since obviously it's just a budgeting item, and so we got to make sure that we budget for it. It will impact the budget for next year if we're going to have them by the 7/1/22 date. There is some question, as everybody agrees you need the body cameras. There's some question of the fact that if you have the body cameras, do you still need the dashboard cameras? I think that's one of the concerns that Chris raised, but. Even we've had discussions before we put in for body cameras before in the budget, And, you know, even I was surprised at that time that the union was fine with it. They see it that it protects them as much as it does the public, and that, you know, they're not a negative thing to have. It's just paying for it. And the cameras themselves are relatively inexpensive. It's the cost of the storage of the data and being able to retrieve it and those things that ends up being expensive.
My quick question on this, Bob, for budgeting purposes, and I do ask as we're going through this because I know it's all kind of interesting reading, but let's keep in mind from a budgeting perspective where our questions are, is the $60,000 to $75,000 after consideration of the 30% to 50% reimbursement, or is that before?
As I'm looking at this, it doesn't say. From my recollection of numbers, that would be, I would say that would be before, so you could probably subtract the 30% from that.
All right. I mean, obviously, we don't need to know until we get into budget process next year, but as we're thinking about it, I would just want to make sure that we are considering whatever reimbursement we thought we were going to get.
Yeah, and just...
We should probably be looking at the 30% rather than the 50, because they said 50 was for municipalities that were hurting and in a different way than we are. So 30 seems more appropriate for what we would be eligible for.
Yeah, I agree. It would definitely be the 30%. Yep, agreed. And the other problem is, I mean, you go out and buy a body camera for really inexpensive, you know, go to Best Buy or something. But once it becomes police grade and all those things, it tends to get a little more expensive. So just, you know, something to keep in mind.
Sarah, I believe, had a question. Sorry.
Yeah, and thank you for the explanation, Kalia, because that was one of my my questions. And that's very helpful to understand that better. The only other thing that jumped out at me in all of this, and it looks like a tremendous amount of work has gone into this. So I think that the chief and you know, selectmen, I mean, this is clearly something that is important and it looks great. The question I have is in the first row under staff manager for 40,000, is that a new permanent position in the police department, or is that just to manage the CALEA accreditation and then it goes away?
Your accreditation process never really stops. You are constantly updating your policies. The accreditation only lasts for a certain amount of time period, and you have to get accredited. And my understanding is that a person that comes on and has one of their primary tasks. I don't know whether we'd have, you know, a person here of that level, even with CALEA. I would hope not. But certainly most departments, from my understanding, from what I'm being told, do. And there would be some staff costs associated with it, yes.
Could add that the when we went through the state accreditation process for Tier 1 accreditation, we did it with existing staff. So there were no adds to staff for that accreditation process. And we are pursuing Tier 2 right now under the same framework.
So it sounds like on this one, Bob, you're sending a note. We don't really know. And I think some of the questions we all have, you guys would be assessing as well on how much of that full 60,000 is really an ongoing annual cost. So appreciate that.
Yeah.
Are there other areas, Bob or Bob, that you, either the selectmen had some concerns with, you'd want to call out, or any other major pieces you'd like to mention to us?
No, I mean, it was some discussion about a civilian review board, but that wouldn't be really a financial impact. I mean, we might need a clerk for it, but that would be it. But there was some discussion about that. If you were to essentially try to embed a social worker with the department or have one on call 24/7, depending on how often they went out, that could become an additional cost. Also, there's some liability with putting a social worker into some of the conditions that the police department has to deal with. But again, they would have to work on that. A lot of the deadly force, the policies, those things we already have implemented. So that's not an issue. It's not a financial issue anyways. I don't know. The only other financial issue was there's a question as what the impact of limiting immunity will have. And basically creating, right now there's a federal, what they call a 1983 action. It's basically federal claims. based on town officials doing things that would violate somebody's constitutional rights. And essentially, the state has taken that federal action and made it a state action also. It is a question as to what impact that would have from an insurance standpoint or from a litigation standpoint. But that's kind of unknown at this time. I think they need to fill in some of the details there. And Kerma hasn't gotten back to us with any kind of a thought on what that risk may be for the town.
But, yeah, that particular item seems like a really contested issue. And so I think it's one that we should keep open minds on and do a bit more research on before we accept one side or the other in terms of what the cost would be for the town.
Yeah, that seems about right, because at this point, I'm not sure, you know, what the
We don't know where this is going to land, and the police are concerned. We're concerned. You're right. It's definitely in flux.
So I think those are the major financial.
Great. Thank you, Bob. All right. Any other Board of Selectmen updates, Bob or Bob?
Not for me.
No, okay. I think we're good.
Thank you. All right, so let's move on to Board of Education updates and referrals. Before I turn it over to Kevin or to Julie, I just want to say thank you on behalf of the board to Kevin, you, the administration, Julie, the board. This summer has not been a normal summer, and I know you guys kind of have a thankless job right now, but appreciate all of the effort you're doing for our town to get our students back to school as safely as for our staff, our town, and our students as possible.
Jen, thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. It's great to see all of you. I hope that your summer's going well and you're all staying well. And Jen, I really appreciate those comments. And we have been working hard, the Board of Ed, under Julie's leadership and Susan Russo in our central office and all of our administrators. So I'll begin with giving you an update as to how we plan to reopen school 2 weeks from today. So over the past 2.5 months, we've been working to come up with our recommendations for our reopening plan. We've had a district-wide task force made up of 14 members, and then we've had three working groups. One working group devoted to systems and operations, another working group focusing on teaching and learning, and a third working group focusing on student and staff wellness. So after all of our hard work, we've determined to open up our schools using what you will hear commonly called the hybrid model. Here in Canton, we're calling it a blended learning model. This is where we will have half of our students attending school in person 2 days a week. We're calling that the cohort method. So cohort A students will attend 2 days a week. The other cohort B, will attend school 2 days a week on Thursday and Friday. So cohort A is in person Monday, Tuesday. Everybody does remote learning on Wednesday, and it allows us to do a truly deep cleaning of the school between the cohorts. And then cohort B arrives on Thursday, Friday, while they've been doing remote learning Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So I hope I've been clear enough with that. I've worked with the model enough and described it enough, but I'm not sure I was as clear tonight about it. We're dividing the cohorts alphabetically. So students with the last name A through K will be part of cohort 1, and L through Z will be part of cohort 2, at least at the elementary level and middle school level. It's a little bit more challenging at the high school level, because being a small high school, it depends on the student's course that they've selected, and we're trying to balance out class sizes. The bottom line is we want about half of the students in the building at one time and half of the enrollment in each classroom at one time. This will allow us to practice all of the new procedures and protocols that we have in place to practice the physical distancing, the wearing of face coverings, and get used to the new safety and hygiene protocols. So with all that being said, another option that the state required every district to offer is an opt-out option. It's called voluntary remote learning. So families who did not feel comfortable sending their child back to in-school learning could choose to have this program to support their students, voluntary remote learning. So as of today, we have 191 of our students who have chosen this option. So we have approximately 100 students, kindergarten through grade six, and 91 students at the middle school, high school level who will take part in this distance learning. This is important for you to know because we will be reporting back to you next month what this additional expense will mean for us, because at the elementary level, we need to have four teachers devoted solely to supporting students during the distance learning period. But we also need teachers in the classroom for those students who are going to participate in in-class learning. So we have a need to hire substitute teachers for 1 year to replace the teacher coming out of the in-person classroom to be the remote learning teacher. So next month in September, I'll be able to give you a full report what those additional expenses are. But that is our plan for reopening. Lots of details have been determined over the past 2.5 months. I do have a webinar posted on our website for anyone who would like to know more information, and then a slide deck of a recent presentation I did for the Board of Education is also on our website as well. So the next two items have to do with finances, but I'll stop there and see if anyone has any questions about our reopening plan. Sarah.
You said 191 students so far have, you're calling it opt out, they're doing the distance learning at home. Can they switch back into the school? I know different districts are handling when they can change their mind. And then do you have a deadline by which everybody has to make a decision before first day of school? Are they still coming in, or where do we stand on that?
Thank you, Sarah. So yes, the deadline was Friday at 5:00. But I'm still answering questions today, so I know that people are still making that decision, and it's really important now that people make that decision, because we're putting the cohorts together and we want to communicate which students are in what cohort this week. So the decision is now. And students can opt back into the classroom as long as families give us 1 week's notice, so that teachers can plan for their return and review the progress they've made during distance learning.
Thank
you.
You're welcome.
Ken.
Kevin, I'm just thinking, you're talking about the deep cleaning at the school. This has got to do with the janitors at the school. And I don't really know how to phrase the question. Are they getting extra protection, extra pay, overtime pay, or anything like that? Was it costing us additional? That's what I'm looking at.
Yes, so I'll talk about the costs associated with personal protective equipment, but we have hired an additional half-time custodian in addition to the staff that we already have, because in the implementation of these recommendations, we realized we are going to need more custodial and maintenance personnel. So we're beginning in the year with an additional half-time person, and we will reevaluate the situation over the next few weeks. We will be paying custodians more overtime than we did budget for because of this situation, but that is yet to be determined. We'll work hard to keep those costs low, but some of it will just be truly necessary.
Okay, thanks. And then the other one, I know you and I talked about this in June, and I keep reading the phrase, I guess, is students who are MIA. And you were talking about, I'm hoping Canton doesn't have that in all this. I've read about it throughout the country with several school districts that let students go, never followed up with them, never did anything. And I hope we take, you know, maybe that's just a personal opinion on my part, that we do take an active role to make sure we find the MIAs.
That's very important, Ken. So in the spring, 95% of our students were participating and engaged in the distance learning. Five or six students we had to continually stay after to make sure they participated. The state did not require that attendance be taken in the spring, but what we've learned is we need to take attendance. So the way that distance learning will be different this year, we will take attendance of all of our students and ensure that all of our students are engaged in their learning, not just participating, but truly engaged.
Thank you. That's good news.
We can do that here in Canton because we're a small enough district.
Small enough district, right. Take advantage of that. Thank you. Okay.
Sarah? And I apologize, this is not to do with Board of Finance, but it's for Kevin and for Julie. I taught a course this summer for students in China, so I was teaching remotely, and I discovered something about how they're cleaning their classrooms in China that you may not have known, but you may already know this. They, in China, throughout the country, they've installed ultraviolet lighting in every classroom. And what the kids do is after they exit the classroom, they, because you can't look at the UV, they turn it on and they sterilize the whole room with this ultraviolet light before the next class comes in. And so it's being done throughout the entire country in China to get rid of COVID-19. And I had not heard about that, so I thought I would pass that on to you guys as something that apparently you can buy the equipment. I don't know how expensive it is, but it might eliminate some ongoing custodial cost, because the cost of cleaning all those surfaces is huge, you know, and it impacts your staff. And so that's how they're getting around it in China. So it's kind of a fiscal impact, but it's more, you know, functional.
Sarah, thank you. I have seen some articles about that. Thank you very much.
Sure.
There have been costs associated with the reopening plan. And so as of July 31st, the Board of Ed approved additional expenditures totaling $188,000 for a variety of materials to allow us to reopen school. And when we give you a financial report in September, reviewing the months of July and August, we'll go over this with you in detail. But I can tell you that of that amount, approximately $35,000 was for personal protective equipment to make sure we have enough masks, face shields for staff, gloves for all staff, and gowns for staff members who deal with students with special needs. We also had to spend $60,000 on desks because we could not have students sit at tables any longer. We had to remove tables from classrooms and make sure that every single classroom throughout our district had desks that were spaced between 4 and 6 feet apart. So that was a big expense. We also needed to expend $6,500 more on cleaning supplies than we budgeted, and also approximately $25,000 on instructional supplies to ensure that every student would have their own set of supplies and not need to share. That was very important. And then the hiring of the additional half-time custodian at a cost of $22,000 was part of this expenditure too. So we wanted to make sure you knew that, and we'll give you a much more detailed report on that in September. Any questions about that right now?
Thank you.
I am going to ask Susan Russo, who's with us tonight, just to report on where we are with end of year. I know we won't be totally finished with our books until August 31st, but Susan can let you know where we are right now.
Good evening, everyone. As Bill alluded to earlier in the evening, we're still finalizing our numbers, but I can tell you we're going to be able to at minimum return the $250,000 we spoke about in June at our last meeting together. All indications are that we'll have at least that amount remaining as I finalize our expenditures. We're still getting some bills in over the last week or two. So we'll have those final numbers for you after you report them to the state on September 1st. We report those numbers. And our grants are all in line and within budget for the expenditures we had. So there was nothing additional unexpected in end of year other than what we discussed already. So we're right on target.
When we come in September, I appreciate, appreciate the moving target you've been working with, right, as you're finalizing things, finalizing the end of last year was a moving target, starting this year. When we have the conversation in September, and I know you guys are great about doing this, anticipating the question of if we've identified any places that potentially we won't see expenditures that we budgeted for, but I know there's still a lot of moving questions, right? Will we or will we not have fall sports and all of those things. But if when you come in September, I always appreciate when you guys can give us that update on here's what we know on this side, but here's what we're thinking on this side too. So we're getting that balanced view, but definitely appreciate the information tonight.
Absolutely, Jen. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Any other comments? Kevin, Susan, or Julie, from a Board of Ed perspective?
I just have one additional item, Jen.
Great.
It's that time of year again. I know it seems like we just did this, but we are going to begin teacher negotiations on September 9th. So I did send all of you a memo today. I'm not sure if you had a chance to look at it. I apologize that I wasn't able to get it out to you until today. I just want to inform you tonight, because by law, the Board of Education needs to inform the town's fiscal authority that we are beginning negotiations with the Education Association of Canton, which is our teachers union. We will be beginning those on September 9th. I'm looking for a representative from the Board of Finance. According to state law, the town may appoint a representative from the fiscal authority to be an observer as part of the teacher negotiations process and to provide input on the fiscal condition of the town if required by the Board of Education. So Jen, I'm just requesting that by a week from Friday, if there's a member of the Board of Finance that would like to be that observer, to let me know, and then I can make sure that that person gets all of the information. It's also possible that more than one person could share that responsibility, as has been done in the past. And I included the dates in the memo that I sent to you today. They're all Wednesday evenings, September 9th, September 16th, September 23rd, and September 30th, beginning at 5 o'clock. Hopefully we end by 10 or 11. Sometimes we go well into the night. So I'd appreciate your consideration on that. And if there's any input you would like to give Julie, Susan, and me tonight as we begin negotiations, any input for us? I know it's uncertain economic times. We're certainly well aware of that, but any guidance you want to give us, we're very open to that tonight or within the next few weeks.
Thank you, Kevin. We will make sure that you get a representative. You said by a week from this Friday, so by the 28th?
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay, we will work through that. I appreciate the opportunity as well as the guidance here. Does anybody have any feedback or comments that they would like to give to Kevin or Julie for Kevin's request now?
Just a big thank you, because I'm sure it's been a very stressful summer for everybody. So thank you to the Board of Ed and the teachers and all your committees, Kevin, and your email was great with the slide deck. That was really, I'm sure a lot of families really appreciated that.
Thank you, Sarah.
No, I'll second what Sarah said too. I think you guys have done a great job. So hats off to everybody on the Board of Ed, all the teachers, staff, everyone's done a fantastic job. So we definitely appreciate all the partnership and the input and the information that you all put out to us on a regular basis.
Thank you, Andrew.
I enjoyed reading your stuff. That was good. Kept the flow going for me. What's happening? Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
All right. And I am sure, Kevin, so most of all, we appreciate you guys that comes through. We will make sure we do get you some comments. I know you guys are very involved from a town perspective, but I invite the members of the board to send you feedback like you just asked. I know I have a few things that I will make sure that I just want to collect my thoughts. I seem to be opposite everybody else on the board. I do all my work for the board on the weekend, and then once Monday hits, I don't look at it. So anyway, it's all good.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the Board of Education? Otherwise, we can move up to new items.
It's not directly at the Board of Education, but I know it's got an impact. We were talking before in June about how many people actually pay their taxes in July, and we were under the threat that they have to use the general fund to fund the government.
That's on 5B, Ken. So I would ask that we just wait until we get to agenda topic 5B.
I will now put my glasses on.
I'd like to cover 5A first, if we can.
Thank you.
All right. Bob, Skinner, I don't know, we've got the Anthem cost tracker. I'm not sure if Bill, you were going to give us just kind of an overview here, or Bob, I think this is our year-end claims information.
I can handle it, Bob, if you'd like me to.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I don't think there's any surprises. Obviously, our claims went down as soon as COVID came around, and as soon as, you know, we got into March, April, May, the claims are down. No one wants to go into hospital, so the question of how much pent-up demand are we going to have coming in the next few months as things begin to turn around, are we going to, you know, I would not be surprised if we have a few months down the road that are particularly high to catch up that were low at the end of last year. We did have a number of claims that went over the $150,000 threshold. We do have an insurance, so they'll pay for each claim that goes over that amount. We did have a number that went over that amount, and so, you know, we'll get some reimbursement there. Well, Bill, those are just some general thoughts. Bill, you have some more specifics?
Yeah, we're at the 97.7. If you skip ahead to page 60, there's a lot of information here, but page 60 kind of explains it all. We're at the 97.7, and it's open, I believe, until September. We'll get our final report come September. This was, I guess, in a weird way, one of the positives of COVID, in that there was kind of people not utilizing their health insurance, getting procedures done.
That might be a question here, Bill. So you said it's open until December. So does that mean we go on, actually these are in curls, and so they would include estimates of reserves in here, or is this truly paid claim basis? You know?
This is paid. So for any claims getting processed, I believe they keep it open until September and then give us a final report at that time. So it can go slightly up from this, but
okay.
Does that answer your question? It's from paid.
Okay. All right. I may have a follow-up question, because if it's paid, they should know what they paid through June 30th type of a thing. And then anything that comes in after that gets paid in July and counts towards our next policy year, right?
Well, if it's for procedures done for prior year, so they give them so much time to get those claims processed, adjudicated, count it back to the 630 plan.
And they haven't layered in any potential reserves for that. So that's why we do have the risk of this going higher.
Correct. I believe this is based on actual. So I think there is a risk that you could have a little bit more here. But this was, I believe, Bob, through 731, I think.
This is through June.
For June claim dates. I mean, for June procedures.
Right.
Yeah.
So, in these some procedures that we haven't been billed for yet. So you will get, but at some point they do have a cutoff. I agree with Bill. I don't think they set up a reserve for anticipated or additional bills. I think it's they come in and pay, and at some point there's a cutoff.
So I've got a question. Instead of playing, devil's advocate, we didn't have any staff with COVID this year, correct?
No, we did have a staff with COVID.
We did, okay. I'm concerned about the school spiking is what I'm worried about. And, that we have a real possibility of kids coming in asymptomatic, giving it to staff getting sick. If we have multiple staff members contracting COVID enough to be hospitalized, and worst case, we have, well, worst case is death, but next to worst case is long-term hospitalization. That's us paying for that, correct?
Presumably they're insured, if they're employed, they're insured through us, and therefore that would be covered under our insurance.
Have you done any what-ifs? I mean, it's hard to know, but statistically, 1% dies, maybe a little under 1%, 0.8%, and something like 3% looks like they're having long-term health problems. That being the case, we've got, Kevin, 200 staff people? Is it more than that? Statistically, what are we looking at?
So we have approximately 370 staff members.
That's way off. Okay, yep.
Well, I mean, if you look at the beginning of this, there's 600 and something people, I think, that are covered. So it's not just the employees, it's the employees' spouses, it's their children, it's a large pool of people, any one of which could be impacted by COVID if they got it even through a school, through a child that went to another school but came home. There's a lot of places where they could get COVID from. We anticipated that there would have been more COVID cases all along, and there weren't. And we anticipated that during the large rush in March and April, our ambulance would be a lot busier with taking COVID patients to the hospital. And so it really is hard to tell. I mean, I mean, we haven't run any of those scenarios, and I'm not sure. This disease has been different, and it's been hard to model. We thought we were going to have a huge rush. We actually brought on some additional ambulance folks, and that rush never came. And so you just don't know. I mean, you really don't. So, but if there were a number of teachers that got ill, chances are they would be covered under our insurance, and that would have an impact on our self-insurance plan.
Yeah, and none of us have a crystal ball, so. You really can't. You can't answer any other way, really. You're right. They're just I see it as potentially being very, very expensive to the town. And then on top of it, there's the cost of substitute teachers to fill in for, if staff has to go out. So, and that's true for other staff in town. If someone's gone, you have to replace them. But we'll just roll with it as it comes.
I think a couple of things is, remember, we have stop loss limit up to 150. So those extreme situations, we would be covered in exception to the 150. Now, granted, though, we could see a number more reach that 150 threshold than we do in the past, which puts us at a limit. I think my questions would be ones I would like you guys to see if we could ask Anthem. So do they have an estimate on how they expect trend to rebound in the next 12 months? To your point, Bob, there's a big question about pent-up demand and when will that come back. I would think that Anthem has looked at that for their book of business and has made an estimate. So do they have any advice that they could give us on that? And then the other thing would just be, do they have a cost tracker? Do they have any kind of estimates that they've looked at with their data? They may not, but on the other hand, they may very well have something that they could give us as guidance for those scenario plannings that Sarah mentioned. We may hear no, but maybe we could at least ask.
Sure.
All right, any other questions on the cost tracker or estimates? All right, With that, let's move on to 5B, the update on taxes and tax collection.
So I'll give that update. The first, this is as of first month or so of tax collection, and we're trending at 47% collected. We've experienced 47% of collected. Bob, you had some feedback on last year's number comparison. Is that an accurate number, or?
Yeah, we've got to look into that. As of through July 22nd, we had actually collected more taxes this year than we did the prior year, which, you know, obviously was very good. If you look at the numbers that we received from the tax collector, it looks like we fell off considerably in the last couple of weeks, well, the last week of July and the first few days in August, because you collect through to the first Monday in August, first Monday in August. And from my discussions with the tax collector, that didn't seem to be the case. So we've got to take a look at those numbers. I think the important thing is, either way, we're close to last year's numbers. And we had real concerns with our cash flow that we may not bring enough money in to actually pay the bills because of extending the deadline for people to pay. And by every indication, most people had the ability to pay, did come in and pay within that first 30-day period. And we certainly appreciate that. And, you know, talking to Bill, looking over the numbers, we don't see any cash flow issues at all. We brought enough money to cover our bills. And, you know, I certainly appreciate the public coming in and paying within that first 30 days, even when they didn't have to. Because we extended that additional 60 days to everybody. So people still came in and paid on time, which was great.
That's great.
That one individual I mentioned back in June that wasn't going to pay his taxes until October, paid it in July.
Yeah, and even we got information today on those who could apply for a additional time to pay their taxes if they're a landlord. We have 225 or something like that of those folks. And by far, the majority of them did not request an extension. And almost all of them come in and pay. We have a couple delinquent. But far and away, they all, you know, came in and paid. So it looks like everybody's paying. We're getting the taxes in, and we got to figure out what the final number is. At least from a cash flow standpoint, we'll be okay.
Any questions on the tax collection? All right, let's move on to FEMA reimbursement update.
So FEMA. Everything was submitted to FEMA, and FEMA came back after processing the application with a lot of questions. So supplemental overviews were provided, detailed explanations, memos to substantiate the expenses. This is for all expenses, all COVID-related expenses through May 31st, which totaled $51,000 and change across the department. This was for $38,000 of it, 75% from FEMA. We haven't received the money yet, but it is being processed. I check on it weekly. Once we do get that processed, we will then turn around and submit a corresponding application to OPM for the remaining 25% of the expense reimbursement. So no money yet, but right now it's just being processed by FEMA.
Just I might add, and if COVID wasn't enough, we also have to apply for FEMA reimbursement because of the windstorm that knocked out the power. Since that was declared as an emergency, we gave FEMA reimbursement for that. We had a lot of overtime associated with that, and water supplies and other things. So poor Bill's got to fill out all the paperwork for that also.
Yeah, there's going to be another FEMA application for everything from 6-1 also through as far as we can go into September and meet the September 30 deadline. So it's been, you know, FEMA's a fun process, but anything we can do to get reimbursed, that's what we'll do.
Great. include the schools, or at this point, are the school submissions separate? And how is that process working?
So this was for, you know, anything to do with the town, so like custodians and cleaning and things like that. As far as the Chromebooks, no, and maybe Sue would speak to that, that's under ESSER funding.
So Jen, to clarify, according to the state, our what's called our ESSER grant has to be utilized in full first, and that application is this week due to the state. We're going to be using that for our, most likely for our technological things we've come up with. We'll be submitting to Bill for the expenses we made almost exclusively over the summer for this next round of FEMA funding. For our PPE and other related safety and health measures, we'll be working with Bill to get those FEMA reimbursements put together.
Okay. I'm hoping this would be extra work because you guys already had it, but if there is a way to kind of keep that, what is the COVID expense, both for the town and the board, and kind of how we've had to manage the situation. I appreciate everything you guys are doing to identify what the sources are for reimbursement and making sure we get as much as we can, but I can anticipate that being a question. So if there's a way we can kind of keep it tracked of this is the different cohorts we've submitted to, and this is how we had to kind of go about funding them. Sounds like it was slightly different between the towns and the Board of Ed, which is understandable based on different grants.
Yep.
Is that too much extra work? Please be honest.
So on my end, we're already trying to label any expense we have as a COVID-related expense. For reporting purposes, we still have to put it into whatever line item that we would have expended to keep it in the right place for state reporting. But we are labeling things as COVID-related, and I've asked all of our administrators, all of our departments to keep a running tally as I am, as I see them, so that we have some kind of idea on what we're spending and why.
Thank you.
For the town side, the different departments collect their COVID-related expenses and submit them to the finance department. We then load that information into a pretty elaborate spreadsheet that is tied to summary sheets that then kind of coincide to what FEMA wants. So I have all that, probably way too many ways than you'd ever want to see it. But as far as how the individual expenses are coded, they are coded to the individual departments. Separately, we track everything on these spreadsheets and the totals. As far as when we eventually do get paid, do get reimbursed for this, we have a separate item for payment reimbursement just from a revenue perspective.
Thank you. Any questions from other board members related to the FEMA reimbursement? Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the next agenda topic. So we have two sets of minutes to approve on page, let's see, I think it's 60 something here. Excuse me, yeah, 63. We have the minutes from our June 8th meeting. Does anybody have any comments or questions on those? Otherwise, I will entertain a motion.
That we accept the minutes from that meeting.
I'll second it.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, 5-0, 5-0. And then the minutes from June 15th. The one thing I noticed in these minutes is there, I think it's on line 74. There is just a dollar amount that's incomplete listed there. It just says, and so this is on page 67 of the packet. The and it actually says 771,000 XXX. I don't know if we need to complete that with the $251. And if so, maybe when the motion is made, we can make it with that correction. Sarah, Sarah, you're on mute.
I'd like to make the motion we approve the minutes. Oh, now I lost the date.
June 15th.
With the amendment that on line 74, the dollar amount that shows XXX be amended to say $771,221.50.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Great, thank you. All right, there were some informational items from Board of Selectmen, Board of Education. And then there's a list here of our upcoming meetings. The next one we will have is September 21st. Bob, one note I made to myself is maybe, I don't know when we can get back to meeting in person, if that can happen yet or not, if we do it in a socially distanced way. So maybe that's something I can just ask that question offline. And we'll circle back with the group.
Yeah, right now, no, from what I understand, if you look at most groups that are meeting, one thing that allows them to do it is they have a closed caption TV so that you can broadcast out what's going on at the meeting. We don't have that possibility. Yeah, there's a lot of them. They're still wearing masks, which I don't know. That seems like it'd be somewhat uncomfortable for 2 hours sitting in a room. But the real concern is that we still have the public have the ability to come in and pack a room if they wanted to.
Okay.
So, all right. Normally, it's the status quo.
All right. Well, thank you. So plan on September 1st. We'll be back on our Zoom meeting and we will look to get the packet out. I will work with Bill to understand how we can do that sooner. And with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right. Andrew and Ken. Got it. And with all those in favor. Sorry, I forgot to ask. All right. We're adjourned. I was ready to shut down the meeting. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a good month, and we'll be touching you very soon. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Good to see everybody.
Thank you.